scalability and globalization. Whenever you hear a snotty and frustrated European middle brow presenting his stereotypes about Americans, he will often describe them as uncultured, unintellectual, and poor in math, because, unlike his peers, Americans are not into equation drills and the constructions middle brows call high culture, like knowledge of Goethe's inspirational and central trip to Italy, or familiarity with the Delft school of painting. Yet the person making these statements is likely to be addicted to his iPod, wear blue jeans, and use Microsoft Word to jot down his cultural statements on his PC, with some Google searches here and there interrupting his composition. Well, it so happens that America is currently far, far more creative than these nations of museum-goers and equation-solvers. It is also far more tolerant of bottom-up tinkering and undirected trial and error. And globalization has allowed the United States to specialize in the creative aspect of things, the production of concepts and ideas, that is, the scalable part of the products, and, increasingly, by exporting jobs, separate the less scalable components and assign them to those happy to be paid by the hour. There is more money in designing a shoe than in actually making it. Nike, Dell, and Boeing can get paid for just thinking, organizing, and leveraging their know-how and ideas, while subcontracted factories in developing countries do the grunt work, and engineers in cultured and mathematical states do the non-creative technical grind. The American economy has leveraged itself heavily on the idea generation, which explains why losing manufacturing jobs can be coupled with a rising standard of living. Clearly, the drawback of a world economy where the payoff goes to ideas is higher inequality among the idea generators, together with a greater role for both opportunity and luck. But I will leave the socioeconomic discussion for part three and focus here on knowledge. Travels inside Mediocristan. This scalable, non-scalable distinction allows us to make a clear-cut differentiation between two varieties of uncertainties, two types of randomness. Let's play the following thought experiment. Assume that you round up 1,000 people randomly selected from the general population and have them stand next to one another in a stadium. You can even include Frenchmen, but please, not too many out of consideration for the others in the group, mafia members, non-mafia members, and vegetarians. Imagine the heaviest person you can think of and add him to that sample. Assuming he weighs 3 times the average, between 400 and 500 pounds, he will rarely represent more than a very small fraction of the weight of the entire population, in this case, about 0.5%. You can get even more aggressive. If you pick the heaviest biologically possible human on the planet, who yet can still be called a human, he would not represent more than, say, 0.6% of the total, a very negligible increase. And if you had 10,000 persons, his contribution would be vanishingly small. In the utopian province of Mediocristan, particular events don't contribute much individually, only collectively. I can state the supreme law of Mediocristan as follows. When your sample is large, no single instance will significantly change the aggregate or the total. The largest observation will remain impressive, but eventually insignificant to the sum.